we have a special offer for Issues Etc. Reformation Club members. If you join or upgrade your membership in our monthly or annual giving program during January or February, we'll add the new Concordia Psalter to the list of current membership benefits. T-shirts, books, broadcast transcripts, and advertising for your confessional Lutheran congregation. You can find out the benefits of being an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron at issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Or contact Craig, 618-223-8385, or Craig at issuesetc.org. Join or upgrade your membership in the Issues Etc. Reformation Club in January or February, and we'll send you the new Concordia Psalter along with your other premiums. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Humanity's been grappling with these questions throughout human history. And lest we get on our high horse and think this is unique to some other place, remember that during the Crusades and the Inquisition, people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ. In our home country, slavery and Jim Crow all too often was justified in the name of Christ.
Now familiar words of President Obama speaking last week at the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington, D.C. Now, we don't expect our presidents necessarily to be experts in history, much less Christian history. So speaking of the Crusades as one thing of the same cloth with the Inquisition is a little anachronistic, but we'll give him that. What he's attempting to do, and I think it's quite clear what he's attempting to do, is draw a moral equivalence between, say, Islamic terrorism today or other forms of religious violence perpetrated today and the Christian Crusades of history. Is that a case that can be made? What were those Crusades? And when we say Crusades, we're not just talking about one event. We're talking about a series, a long series of diverse events. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 11th of February. Dr. Matt Phillips will join us. He's Associate Professor of History at Concordia University in Nebraska to talk about the president's statement and whether or not there's a moral equivalence between the Christian Crusades and, say, today's Islamic terrorism. A little bit later, we're going to be talking with Pastor Tom Eckstein, chairman of God's Gift of Sexuality Task Force for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, author of the book Bearing Their Burden and an article in the Lutheran Witness magazine titled How Do I Help Them About Witnessing to People with Same-Sex Attraction. You can join us for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943 with questions or comments, 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. Or as always, our beloved on-demand listeners, whenever you're listening, wherever you're listening, you can always use the Issues Etc. comment line. It's open 24-7, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Dr. Matt Phillips is a regular guest and associate professor of history at Concordia University, Nebraska. Matt, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to be back.
There are really three questions here, and I wanted to kind of take them one at a time. I mean, the first one is when we talk about the Crusades, were they, as he said, perpetrated in the name of Christ? The second question is really, does that mean there's a moral equivalence between that and modern Islamic terrorism? And the third one is really of more historical import. When we say Crusades, are we just talking about one event? Let's start with the first one. Were these wars, what were they, and were they carried out in the name of Christ?
The Crusades, when historians generally talk about the Crusades, and believe it or not, there's still debates among historians what exactly Crusades were. But the general agreement is the Crusades that had to do with the Middle East were events that started in the late 11th century and went through, there were popes actually trying to call Crusades as far as the 16th century. Now, the real big era of the Crusades would have been through the late 11th century through the early 14th century. Crusades were fought in the name of Christ. I don't think there's any way to deny that. The authority who called a crusade was the Pope. The Pope gave a indulgence for people who participated in the crusade. Crusades really began out of the combination of two things. the pilgrimage tradition in Christianity, in medieval Christianity, and that had to do with doing penitential journeys, and the combination of that with defense or warfare, which you could call it holy warfare, a holy war at some point, war blessed by God because it had certain, at least for the people of the time, laudable goals.
So in answer to the first question regarding the president's remarks, while he may not understand it exactly that kind of depth, it
right.
is, as far as it goes, it is an accurate statement that the Crusades, generally speaking, were carried out in the name of Christ.
Well, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's like something you learn in, what, you know, seventh grade world history, I think. I mean, I don't know. Maybe people aren't learning that. But that's a very general statement. That's generally true, yes.
And we actually have, I mean, I want you to speak a little bit about this, if you could. We have documents. We have the documents by which some of these crusades, pilgrimage slash military campaigns were chartered by various popes, don't we?
Yeah, we have letters. Sometimes they're letters. We have a number of letters from all the Crusades, starting with the First Crusade in 1095. We have, so usually those were papal letters. We have collections of canons taken from councils where Crusades were called. The Crusades is actually quite a documented period in a medieval history. Yes, absolutely.
Then let's turn to the third question that I laid out there, and that is, when we say Crusades, you've answered this in part, we're not talking about one series of wars. We're talking about a bunch of diverse events that were carried out by many different peoples and for many different reasons, aren't we?
Absolutely. There are commonalities, and like anything that evolves over time, it changed, it developed, it became more organized by the papacy, it became more streamlined would be a good way to put it, I think, in modern parlance. By the 13th century, preaching the Crusades became more organized, raising money became more organized. There were similarities among the First Crusade through the rest of them, but they were different times carried out by different people at different places.
It's often stated that they were defensive military campaigns. Is that entirely true?
Again, let's just start with the First Crusade. I mean, there's still a debate. I was just debating a fellow historian about this since this information, you know, since the president's speech came out on Friday. Some historians would say, certainly from the Crusaders' point of view, yes. The Muslim Turks, and before them Arabs and other Muslims had taken over Christian lands, but the Turks were kind of a fresh group of Muslim converts that had come in and into the Middle East in the 11th century and were pushing farther west, so across what would be modern-day Iraq and Syria into what would be modern-day Turkey. That territory in the early 11th century, the area of modern-day Turkey, was mostly part of the Byzantine Christian Empire. So these Turks started pushing into that area. The political or military instigation for what became the First Crusade was the Byzantine Christian emperors sending requests to the West asking if they could help send knights to fight these Turkish, what they would have considered Turkish invaders. So, yes, in that sense, from the people's point of view at the time, they would have saw it as defensive, fighting back against what they considered to be Muslim incursion against what was Christian land. They then extended that to Jerusalem, and with the whole idea of Jerusalem being the place of Christ, where the church began, and where Christ rose from the dead, and so, et cetera, they extended that to that area and said this should also be part of the Christian lands and ruled by Christians. So that's how Jerusalem became a main goal of the Crusade.
Were they successful in all of their military ambitions? Obviously not all of them, but were they generally successful
in the Crusades? Well, not really. The First Crusade was really, I mean, as far as in the Middle East, there were, if you want to include Spain in the Crusades, you could say that the Christians in Europe were generally successful against retaking the Iberian Peninsula, Spain and Portugal essentially, from what was Muslim rulers. There were also Crusades not against Muslims, later in the 13th century particularly, against various groups that were considered heresies in Europe. And there were crusades against, I guess, for lack of a better term, pagans in the north, who were, again, it was usually presented as attacking the church in some way. So there's, you know, there's always a debate about those things. But in the Middle East, actually, the crusade period was a great victory for Islam of different types, whether it was Turks or Mongols later. And if you study the Reformation period, I mean, by 1500, the Turks have not only totally driven all the, quote, crusaders out of the Middle East, but they're pushing into Europe. I mean, in 1529, the Ottoman Turks, who were the great Muslim power of the day, were attacking Vienna, Austria. And if you know anything about Luther's history, I mean, he talks about this. The Turks, who were the great representation of Muslims at the time, or a lot of Muslims, are actually winning easily, if you want to look at it from a military standpoint, by the 1500s. And there were technically crusades in the 16th century. The popes gave indulgences for people to fight Turkish Muslims during that period.
So if we were to judge them by way of, and obviously we're sweeping with a very broad brush over all of these, what we'll call religiously justified wars on the part of Western Christendom, they were perhaps short-term victories, but ultimately, with respect to, by the time of the Reformation, long-term not.
Yes, huge failures.
Huge failures.
In fact, this idea that Muslims in the 18th century were still sitting around wringing their hands about how badly they've been treated during the Crusades is simply not true. Most Muslims in the Middle East didn't talk about the Crusades. They were reminded of the Crusades. The big problems, and this is my political handicapping of modern history, the main issues that have to do with the Middle East today, historically speaking, start with European colonialism in the 19th and early 20th century, and then add in that oil, a lot of oil being there. They have nothing to do, in my opinion, it's my opinion, with what happened in the Crusades in the 12th or 13th century. A Muslim should look back at those times, if they want to look at it this way, as great victories in driving out the infidels who attacked their land, because that's what happened.
Dr. Matt Phillips is our guest on this Wednesday afternoon, February 11th. We're talking about President Obama's comments about the Crusades during a National Prayer Breakfast meeting. He's Associate Professor of History at Concordia University, Nebraska. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, Coordinator for Stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship, lcms.org/stewardship.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Imagine steadfastlutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub, your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm. So check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
Listen to the best of the Church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Shine with truth and light.
Sacred Music for the Epiphany Season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We'll talk with Dr. Matt Phillips, Associate Professor of History at Concordia University, Nebraska, about President Obama's comments about the Crusades during the National Prayer Breakfast. So at this point, Dr. Phillips, we've dealt with kind of two of these questions, and that is two of the questions that I've posed. One, was the president, insofar as what he said, accurate that these things were justified in the name of Christ by the people who carried them out? And that the answer to that is pretty much, in terms of history, it's a settled question. Yes, they were, but we can't speak of the Crusades as a single event. There are many different events. The third question I wanted you to take up was, and this I think is kind of generally accepted, that the president was attempted to draw a moral equivalence between the Christian Crusades and modern-day Islamic terrorism or religious violence. Is that justified?
I mean, I think it's almost anachronistic. I think that would be the way to look at it. Or maybe the opposite of anachronism. We're trying to import things from the Middle Ages. Basically, the idea of fighting a war for your religious belief, whether it was Muslim or Christian, or at least the places I know about the most, was a completely rational and logical thing to do in 1200. In fact, people in 1200 would have found it odd that we fight wars for democracy and communism or whatever your political ideology. They would have found that extremely weird, that we bomb stuff and kill people to spread these ideas. So as far as that goes, sure. I mean, but it's not a moral equivalency in the sense that we're talking about a different time, a different place. You're having to go back and import something from hundreds of years ago that aren't, to me, they're just not comparable in that sense. Now, I mean, is it a religion? Was it religious warfare? Yeah, in that sense, you could say sure. But the idea that we're, quote, getting on a moral high horse and condemning these people when we have all these problems that we did in the past, well, I'm like, first of all, America didn't fight any crusades. I don't think the United States was ever involved in any religious war. I certainly could look at history and see plenty of problems the United States had, but the United States was founded explicitly on the notion that you wouldn't fight religious wars. To lump the United States in any way into that, he was speaking in the United States. I mean, I guess he was speaking to a Christian group. I don't know what the prayer breakfast is. But that's
an extremely diverse group of religious people, Christians and non-Christians.
So, I mean, you could go through history and find any time anybody of any group has ever done anything that we consider bad today and say, see, we're not any better than them. Now, I mean, if we want to start looking at what has the United States done, when I say the United States, I mean the government and the military done, and say, would somebody in the Middle East have a legitimate argument to argue about something we've done bad and want to respond to that? That's a different issue. And I think that's a good thing we need to debate in this country about those things. I think it's a silly thing to bring up, frankly, to talk about ISIS or Al-Qaeda or any other group and say, well, Christians did this a long time ago, too, so they're not any better, and we need to remember that. It's just kind of weird. I mean, that's my reaction to it, basically.
Jan listens in Atlanta. Thank you for being patient, Jan.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's silly. First of all, that any equivalency could be drawn with another faith tradition. We have from Scripture that we are to judge each other in the church because God will judge the world. And the second thing, I'm just curious about, why are we focused on something that happened 500 years ago when the president's remarks also addressed the use of Christianity to justify Jim Crow and slavery?
Jan, thank you very much, and thanks for listening there in Atlanta.
I'm not, I mean, I have my opinions about slavery and Jim Crow. I think they were bad things, but I'm not an Americanist. That's not my area of expertise to talk about. They're obviously bad things, and I wish they hadn't happened. So, I mean, I don't know what else to say about that, frankly.
Is part of it, at least in terms of the comparison with Islamic terrorism, is part of the apples and oranges thing.
Right. That, Jim Crow wouldn't work with that as well, I don't think. I mean, it was a bad thing and whatever, you know. But
well,
yeah.
There may have been individual Christians who attempted to justify Jim Crow or slavery
sure.
on the basis of biblical teachings or Christian belief or something like that. They may have done that.
Sure.
But it to me, that's of a different caliber altogether than, let's say, ISIS saying, look, we have a caliphate that we want to spread worldwide.
Right.
And in order to do that, we will just kill anybody who stands in our way. That's
right.
of a different caliber.
Yeah, that's true. And another thing to remember about the Middle Ages is, you know, Saladin, who was this great hero of the Third Crusade and reconquered Jerusalem, I mean, we know he killed thousands of Christians in battle, and despite the people of Jerusalem had to negotiate and pay their way out. I mean, that was just a common way things were done in the Middle Ages in war. People killed people in brutal ways. But you know what? War still works that way, and we need to remember that. People die when you have a war. And a lot of times the people that die are not the ones who – that they die is what euphemistically are called collateral damage. And that happened in the Middle Ages, but it also happens a lot more in the modern period, in fact, maybe just because there's more people. But that's the way warfare works, and it's unfortunate, and that's why we should try to avoid it, in my opinion, as much as possible.
So it sounds like you're saying that looking back on the Christian situation, East and West, with the incursion of largely, you know, of different nationalities and ethnicities, but an Islamic encroachment into whether it be former Christian lands or, well, yeah, former
right.
Christian lands or current Christian lands in Southern Europe. Regardless of that, the mindset of the what, let's just say for the sake of argument, the 12th century
right.
Christian leader was that you wouldn't even think about going to war if you didn't think God was behind you.
Exactly. I mean, what's the point? That was the legitimization of the war. Just like I said, to me, the best comparison is some ideological war. We're fighting for our quote freedom, or we're fighting to. Make the world safe for democracy. That was what Wilson said about World War I. That's the perfect modern ideological reason. So while we think it's horrific that we would fight for, quote, God today, they would think it's really odd that somebody would fight for political ideology only.
Do we also have to take into account, and this has kind of been brought up already, the degree to which in the 12th century and following, there simply wasn't a distinction between church and state that we have in modern Western democracy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very modern Western notion. There was a distinction between them. They were not. There wasn't the same conception of state in the 12th and 13th century. That's a modern notion. The modern nation state is not that old as a concept. Most people don't realize that when we use those terms. So those are also different ideas. And guess what? In Islam has never had that tradition. And I think that's one of the issues that Islam is still wrestling with. And you know what? We don't have the, quote, right to impose a modern or postmodern Western idea on them. And I think, frankly, a lot of them resent us for that reason. Do I want it to be that way? Well, probably. I mean, I grew up in America, and I like the idea of, you know, quote, separation of church and state in a certain way. But the people in Algeria, I'm just picking a place, or Saudi Arabia or Iran, depending on their personal beliefs, believe something differently. And you know what? That's their countries and their societies. They decide those things, not us. That's kind of the way I see it. And do I wish things were different in different parts of the world? Sure. The difference is, you know, when you have one of these groups like ISIS, who are they actually killing mostly? You know, I think they've actually made more Muslims mad at them than anybody else. And I think ultimately, I'm a historian, not a prophet, but I predict that they'll be defeated by other Muslim groups eventually, because they just aren't going to want to put up with it as much.
Two final questions for you. Is it something, in your opinion, that perhaps our leaders need to understand, the fact that Islam, even in the 21st century, has a very 6th century understanding of mosque and state, a complete blending of the two? Would they do well to understand that?
I think Westerners have to understand, I don't know if I'd say 6th century, maybe a little, because when we speak of Islam, there are a lot of different forms of Islam, as we know, but it seems to me that in immediate Middle Eastern Islam, they have a different understanding of what it means in society to be religious and what role religion plays in running that society. And yes, it's still a very, what we would think of as pre-Enlightenment idea of, you don't have the, quote, separation of religion and the rest of your life. Westerners seem to leave, you know, religion is something I do on my own privately, and then any time it ever comes out, then that's a bad thing. But they don't think that way, whether for negative or positive. I don't think most people in the Middle East think that way. There are a lot of different forms of Islam, so we have to take that into account. But, you know, Islam also tells you you should help the poor and, you know, defend your neighbor and those kind of things, too. So I think you can take the good with the bad in some circumstances. But, yes, Westerners have to understand people in the Middle East don't think the same way we do. That's not necessarily a good or bad thing. It's just the way it is.
What do you think is, finally here, the biggest myth that persists about the Christian Crusades?
Probably one of the bigger myths is that it was done as wars of conversion. They were not wars of conversion. There were some Christian wars of conversion in certain circumstances. But primarily the Crusades, in the people's mind at the time, was about defending Christianity and winning back Christian territory. They did not force everybody in their territory to convert. They didn't always treat everybody as well as as well as they probably should have as Christians. But they didn't force everyone to convert any more than Muslims always forced the other side to convert. They had very similar approaches in those places where Christianity was kind of the dominant religion. And sometimes it was Western Christianity is the dominant religion with other Christian and Muslims, you know, below that. And in Muslim societies, it's similar, where the Muslim Islam is dominant, and then they allow Christianity and Judaism as a subservient groups in their society.
Dr. Matt Phillips is Associate Professor of History at Concordia University, Nebraska. We did a in-depth 5-part series with Dr. Phillips on the Crusades, and a half hour from now at issuesetc.org, we will cover the origins of the First Crusade, the Second Crusade, the papal politics, the Third Crusade, Pope Innocent, and some other crusades, the Third and the Fourth, Fifth Crusades, and St. Louis and the 13th Crusade. It's a 5-part in-depth series on the Christian Crusades beginning in 1/2 hour at issuesetc.org. Listen for that with Dr. Matt Phillips. Matt, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Tom Eckstein. The question of witnessing to people with same-sex attraction is a diverse question. You might be dealing with someone who has no religious affiliation or sensibilities whatsoever. You might be dealing with someone who is a burned-out Christian, someone who's angry about the way that they were treated by Christians because of their same-sex attraction. How do we not only witness to them, but how do we demonstrate that we actually want to help them and not hurt them? We'll answer some of those questions. Pastor Tom Eckstein, author of the book Bearing Their Burden, right after this. Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Faith Lutheran Church and School in Plano, Texas preaches Christ crucified. Join us each Lord's Day to hear law and gospel preaching and to receive the Lord's Supper. Our classical preschool through grade 12 Lutheran school is second to none. The school serves home educators, too, with online classes in the high school. We are located at 1701 East Park Boulevard in Plano, Texas. Reach us by phone at 972-423-7448 or on the web at www.flsplano.org.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here's Eric listening in Chicago. Hi, Eric. What's up?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I really encourage people to give to Issues Etc. as it's the flagship of confessional liturgical Lutheranism in the world, I'd say, on the media.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported, and you can support the flagship of confessional liturgical Lutheranism in the media by making a secure online donation at our homepage, issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
Christ at the Center, The Justification of the Ungodly, A Contemporary View of Faith and Reason, The Holy Spirit in Christ. These are just some of the almost 30 essays included in Propter Christum, Christ at the Center. It's a new book of essays in honor of Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Daniel Preuss. Find out more and purchase Propter Christum at shop.logia.org. Propter Christum, Christ at the Center, shop.logia.org.